this is the case of Dreesen Enterprises, Inc. versus Dreesen. Mr. Chipman, we just excused you, but you're back again. So good morning again.
Good morning. I should maybe change my tire or something, you know, to get myself a fresh look.
And Mr. Bartling, good morning to you.
Good morning. Okay,
members of the court introduce themselves. Mr. Chipman is actions before, but you haven't, Mr. Bartling, so we're going to do that. I'm Mike Hennigan, the Chief Justice, and then by order of seniority and service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle.
Good morning. Stephanie Stacy.
Jeff Funk. Good morning.
Jonathan Papik.
And John Frydenberg.
Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, thank you.
Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chipman. Then you may proceed, and we've got the timing down, ready to go.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Dave Chipman, and I have the pleasure of representing Rose Dreesen, who is the appellant in this matter. There's a lot going on in this case, Your Honor. Let me start by just some brief facts. The parties, and when I say the parties, it's a bit confusing. Dan Dreesen, the individual, and Rose were married for 25 years. They get divorced in 2004. They continued an on-again, off-again relationship that almost to the present day. There is a decision made for them to purchase a home together. That home is purchased in Lincoln, Nebraska, in July of 2016. And so what ends up happening is Rose has inherited approximately $70,000. This is all in the record. And she gives $50,000 of that money to Dan Dreesen. She writes those checks to Dan Dreesen, which I think is important, to Dan Dreesen. Dan decides to put the property, this residence, in the name of his business. So he has this corporation. Well, the business hasn't operated since 2002, but he still has this corporation on the books called Dreesen Enterprises, which ultimately is the plaintiff in this matter. And so one of the things that happened at trial was the judge that found it to be significant that Rose did not object to Dan putting the name of the property into Dreesen Enterprises because she was told about it. But the evidence indicates she was told about it at the time of closing. She has no knowledge until the time of closing, and there is no dispute on the record that she does not know that this property is not going to be jointly held in their names until the time of closing. And there's a case, I believe it's the Faust case. It's a 1979 case that talks about that. Regardless of how it's titled, that doesn't stop you from having a constructive trust. But regardless of their knowledge of how it's going to be titled, doesn't stop a constructive trust. However, Rose doesn't even know about it until the time of closing. At this point, she's lost all of her leverage. She's literally handed over almost all of her life savings to this man. And you have to also remember, she's living on SSI. So she's making like $650 or so, or $700 a month. That's all she's living on. And so she's given this man, who she's been in an on-again, off-again relationship for a period of 40 years, all the money she had. And you have to look at it. You wouldn't just go give somebody $50,000 unless you had a trust for that person and you had a relationship with that person. For instance, Justice Frydenberg probably isn't going to loan me $50,000 without the paperwork. That's just, but these folks have a relationship. And that confidential relationship is very important to the imposition of that constructive trust, which we were asking for. And I think some of these facts are very important. She does domestic services for him. She cleans, cooks. She does his laundry. She does everything for this man. And he admits it. Yeah, I can ask her to, but yeah, she does it. She alleges that they continue to have sexual intercourse. He says they don't. They've been living together off and on. Prior to her moving into the home in Lincoln, she spent 6 months cleaning up Dan's Beatrice home without pay. Okay, she does that. So that clearly there's some kind of relationship. That's not things that people normally do for each other.
This is a credibility issue, and did the did the trial court judge make credibility findings, and what's our standard of review on that?
She doesn't make specific findings. You can infer the findings that she's made based upon what she's stated, potentially, or she doesn't think that there's a burden that Rose has met her burden of proof for imposition of trust, which, you know, is clear and convincing evidence of an abuse of a confidential relationship, you know, where property has been titled in the name of another to the detriment of that person. In this case, it's there. And so, but Dan keeps slapping you in the face with things showing that he's abusing this relationship. For instance, he says that he put the title of this property in Drews Enterprises to keep Rose from making a claim against it. So these kind of things don't happen, he says. The other thing he says is, yeah, she gave me the $50,000, but I tried to give it back to her once I realized things weren't going to work out between us. Obviously indicating that this is not like some kind of normal loan situation. And, you know, the other thing is that clearly she's not a tenant. Clearly she's in this to buy the property with Dan. Dan, through Drews Enterprises, takes out an interest-only loan for the first, like, 6 months. And who pays the interest of that loan, the entire interest of that loan? Rose, $4,000. Pays it all, okay? Those aren't things that people normally do for each other unless they're in a confidential relationship. Rose says that this was her forever home with Dan. And the thing, Dan admits that he knew prior to acquiring the property that Rose presumed this was going to be their forever home. So he knows that she's relying on him for all of these facts and circumstances, and she hands over $50,000 to the guy. And it's absolutely inequitable for him to keep that property without it being jointly titled, you know, because of the fact is the evidence showed that the value of the property had gone up $42,000. I mean, Rose was cleaning the house. The front door of the home was provided by Rose. These are not things that tenants do for each other. I don't know the last tenant that provided a home for their front door. The other issue the court should consider is that Dan says, well, Rose is crazy. She has mental health issues. These are things he says. He admits that he knows that that Rose has bipolar disorder. And he's taken advantage of a woman who he's in a relationship with and allowing her to hand over money while he maintains all the control, puts in his business's name, does whatever he wants. And then after 2 years, when he gets tired of her, he says, you're a tenant and I'm going to kick you out now. And so an imposition of a trust without that is inequitable. There was sufficient evidence for the imposition of a trust. This is not a normal situation where someone's just, you know, a landlord tenant. And basically what the appellee, Dreesen Enterprises and Dan wanted the court to believe was that Ms. Dreesen was a tenant. And I've cited in my briefs from very good cases that talk about the fact that in a situation like this, this is not a landlord-tenant issue. These are not, you know, with a lease, even if it's oral, it has to be clear and unequivocal. There's a writing subsequent to the lawsuit by Rose that says that I agree that I can contribute $500 towards the house. That's what she's saying. Again, going more towards the fact this is a joint enterprise. Not that she's agreed to pay $500 in rent, but this is a joint enterprise where she's putting money towards, you know, the joint, you know, livings of the party. She's buying groceries, she's cooking and cleaning. And so, you know, there's not an equitable result at the end of the day because there's no imposition of a trust and there's no partition that is ordered to disgorge the remaining benefits that Mr. Dreesen has incurred. And I think it's important also to note that when the court does award Rose $50,000, the court says, yes, you win on your unjust enrichment claim. They don't make Dreesen Enterprises pay the $50,000. They make Dan pay the $50,000. So the court is already recognizing the fact that the use of Dreesen Enterprises is ludicrous. And Dan's use of that is just, again, more attempts to leverage and harm Rose through that confidential relationship. It is not truly for a business purpose. And so that is where we're alleging the court abused its discretion by not imposing that that constructive trust, showing that Rose has an equitable interest in the property, which would then allow her to do a partition. And so it's very important that this court find, first of all, that she's not a tenant, that no oral lease existed, and second, that she's entitled to the imposition of a trust as equity demands, and then remand it back to the court to decide on a partition once she is granted equitable title of the property. I would like to keep the remaining minutes for a rebuttal, or a second, excuse me.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bartling, good morning to you. You may proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honor. Chris Bartling on behalf of the plaintiff, Dreesen Enterprises, and the third-party defendant, Daniel Dreesen. May it please the court. I think the most important thing to recognize here is the standard that's necessary for a constructive trust to be imposed. The court has to find that there's clear and convincing evidence before imposing a constructive trust that that my client, Dreesen Enterprises, has obtained title to the property by fraud, misrepresentation, or abusing a confidential relationship. There simply was not.
How was this not abusing a confidential relationship?
Your Honor, the evidence at trial agreed to by both parties, numerous times that the evidence pointed to this being a loan. It's a $50,000 loan from Rose to Dan. Now, I agree there was no documentation associated with the loan other than the writing of the check, but the evidence does support that this was a loan. And if there would have been documentation in this, we probably wouldn't be sitting here today. I mean, people do things all the time that lawyers would find that's not the right thing to do as far as having the proper documentation associated with it. So there was no promissory note or other loan documentation, but there also was nothing to indicate that Rose wanted to be an owner on the property, or was the property is going to be titled in her name. I mean, she didn't sign the purchase agreement. She knew that one had been signed before the fact. She certainly would have known that. She went to the closing, and at the closing, knew that the property was not going to be titled in her name. She never objected at the closing or any time thereafter. The only time she finally objected was when Mr. Dreesen, a few months later, tried to repay the loan to her. At that point, she said she ripped the check that he tried to give her in half up because she wanted to move into the property.
I beg your pardon. Okay. What undisputed facts are there that would demonstrate that this quote transaction is a loan? Did the customary arrangements of a loan? Is there interest in a specific time frame and things of that nature?
No, the testimony that Dan had at trial was that it was a loan that did not include interest. He testified that she wanted that money out of her name because she had garnishments pending. She also wrote a letter to my office prior to being represented by an attorney that stated that it was a loan. At the start of the letter said, "I'm going to tell you the truth. This was a loan." But Dan, she felt, didn't repay her enough of the money back when he tried to make the payment to her.
Was that letter in the record?
Yes, it was.
All right, thank you.
It was a handwritten letter that she had sent right after being served with the summons. She also testified that she requested repayment of the loan numerous times while they were living together. So the evidence there were a number of spots in both trials that indicated that the evidence established that this was a loan between the parties. She also wrote in her letter to my office the terms of the lease between the parties. That first it was going to be for $600 a month, and then she said it was going to be for $500 a month because that's all that she could afford at the time. I mean, look, our position.
Chipman characterizes this as two people who have, this is the way I think he characterizes it, as two people who have had a long-term relationship. They've had four children together. They were married, I think, for 25 years. She clearly has some mental health issues. And now they still have some kind of a relationship. She has put $50,000 into this, and he would like to now sell the home and get the profit from it and not share it with her. What is your response to that argument?
Oh, he certainly, our position from the get-go, prior to the beginning of trial, Your Honor, was that the judge should order a judgment that the judge felt was an appropriate amount against Mr. Dreesen. We asked for $50,000, give or take, how much she found was contributed. Mr. Dreesen says that he made certain contributions towards Rose. Rose said that Dan owed her more than $50,000. The court found that $50,000 should be paid from my client. We never disagreed that a judgment should not be entered, but the position we would have is that the constructive trust should not be imposed because there was not clear and convincing evidence that there was any kind of fraud or an abuse of a relationship. That, you know, she simply that it was a loan between the parties. So, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought there. the court made a proper finding as far as the ruling that Dreesen Enterprises is the title holder of the property, and the title is quieted for Dreesen Enterprises. The evidence as far as the relationship between the parties, it was an off and on relationship, but it certainly wasn't to the extent that Rose was doing all of this cooking and cleaning for him. And the evidence on a romantic relationship, when she was questioned, well, what's the what evidence is there that you're in a romantic relationship? Rose stated that, well, we slept apart for a long time, so that it wasn't really showing that they were romantically involved as far as she was concerned.
Counsel, I think someone asked your opposing counsel whether there were any credibility findings. Didn't the court make a credibility finding that Daniel's version of events, that the $50,000 was a loan, is more credible? Wasn't that an express finding?
Yes, Justice Castle, that is correct. That's what the court found, is that the evidence suggested and established that it was more credible that it was a $50,000 loan, and there was a finding that the constructive trust should not be imposed, and the court quieted title Dreesen Enterprises, and that simply that's what the evidence established. That was the loan from Rose. I mean, Rose's own testimony in both cases, she stated that it was a loan. And in her mind, things changed later as far as she was concerned. But there was never an agreement with Dan that this was not a loan. It always was a loan.
What evidence was there about the history of these parties dealing with similar properties?
Yeah, there was testimony at the trial, and there's documentary evidence. So they had been married for a long time. They got divorced in 2004. And after that, Rose had at some point moved into a rental property that Dan had. He ended up filing an eviction and having to evict her from that rental property. And then there's conflicting evidence on where that she moved to Wymore after that, the rental properties in Beatrice, that she moved to Wymore. She stated that she at some point moved back in to another property that Dan had in Beatrice. And when she moved into the, she moved into the property that he had in Beatrice that he was trying to sell because a lot of her stuff was in that property. You know, they've had a long relationship. It's just been kind of, it's not a simple thing. It's just not a simple relationship between them, but you're right. There was a lot of prior dealings and, so. Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
48 seconds.
We have 48 seconds, Mr. Chipman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, the, talk about the evidence. The evidence shows that these people were going and buying a house together, and they had an ongoing relationship. This was her putting a down payment on a property for them to own the property together. And they talk about, Judge Castle, I believe, asked a question about the previous issues. She was evicted after the divorce from the marital home in Beatrice, which is 1032 Frontier Road. If you look at that, it's the exact address that Dan had moved from, then subsequently moves from that address to Lincoln, to the new home we're talking about. So he had evicted her and she didn't fight it. From a house in Beatrice after their divorce.
Mr. For the letter where she states that was a loan.
In the letter, she talks about the fact that she gave him $50,000, but $50,000 isn't enough. I don't believe that she tries to properly characterize it as a loan, but just that, but Dan knew the money that he had given her, or him, excuse me. But she'd also, in that same letter, talks about the fact that that's not all. This is not like, she doesn't do a great job articulating in that letter, again, because she suffers from some pretty serious mental illness. But she also talks about the fact that, hey, before I gave him $4,000 to pay off the interest on this interest-only loan, I had him sign this piece of paper saying, this is our house together, and that I'm going to give you this $4,000 plus the $50,000 I've already given you. You know, so she's trying her best to document, you know, the amount of money that she's given this man, in hopes that he doesn't try to, take advantage of her, which he obviously has in the past, continues to take advantage of her as he is now, by trying to treat her as a tenant rather than at least, at the very least, an equitable owner of the property. I mean, who stands by as a landlord and allow someone to, you know, landscape the property, put a new front door in, buy a new refrigerator, install it, put a new stove in, cook and clean for them, have sex with them? And she talks about they have sexual intercourse. This is not a woman who's a tenant, and the fact that he's trying to treat her as a tenant just shows how far he's gone in abusing that confidential relationship. He tried the quickest thing he could to get her out of that property, which is treating her as a tenant, and then trying to file a forcible entry and detain her in the Landlord Tenant Act. And so she absolutely is not. She's not a tenant, and she did her best trying to articulate in that letter. But she does go over all of the money and all the things she's done for Dan and all the money she spent for Dan and their children while living together. And I don't believe she characterizes it alone, that letter, Justice Freudenberg.
Thank you very much. I believe that concludes arguments on Dreesen Enterprises, Inc. versus Dreesen. Counsel, you are both excused, and the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Russell. Thank you again.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.